Wisconsin's turkey producers are reporting strong local demand despite some falloff in production. We're talking about turkey processing capacity and how farmers are doing right now. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Agriculture census figures on Wisconsin turkey farms give some mixed indicators. Are you a turkey farmer? How have you seen the industry change over the years? Where are you buying your Thanksgiving turkey from? Join in at 800-642-1234. Ron Kane is in poultry production and management at the UW Extension College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. Ron, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So the number of turkey farms in Wisconsin has seen a slight decrease over the past decade. Can you talk a little bit about what market forces you're seeing right now?
Yeah, the turkey industry in Wisconsin is kind of unique, I would say. There's a lot of really small farms, as the census showed, raising anywhere from a half a dozen up to a few hundred turkeys. And then there's a very large company out in the northwestern part of the state that raises, a couple million birds or about 4 million birds, I guess.
Is that Genio and Barron?
Right. Yeah, okay. That's Genio. And so we really see that big split. There's very large and there's very small, and there's really not a lot of production in between. And I think a big part of that is a lack of processing capacity. There's really not a lot of processing plants that will do turkeys. And so that limits a lot of that middle-sized growth, I think.
So these farms are raising the birds and then sending them off for processing. They're not doing everything on the farm.
That's kind of the split, yeah. So the large ones, that's the case. There's one processing plant there in Barron that would do all of those turkeys. And then really below that, state rules only allow 1,000 birds processed per year on your farm, so that really limits things.
How have you seen turkey farmers struggle in the past? Has avian flu still have a lingering impact on the industry?
Yeah, I think especially in those 2017 numbers, we probably saw that. There were some breeder flocks that were affected and had to be depopulated. And so there was a shortage of hatching eggs for a while. So that may have been reflected some in those numbers. I think since then, there was kind of an overshoot of turkey production. So then the prices went down a bit. And so now I think some farms have backed off a little bit and are not producing quite so many because of that. So now the prices are actually coming back up and things are looking pretty good, I think.
Did we have any lessons learned from avian flu and that outbreak in 2015?
We sure hope so. I think there's a lot more biosecurity, again, at the larger farms especially, but They do a lot to try to keep any spread of disease, limiting any interaction with wild birds, limiting interaction, I think, from farm to farm as well. And there's been some added cost to that, too. They've done a lot of work with more sanitation and more disinfection and things. So there's been some added costs.
So when the birds are raised here in Wisconsin, what do our markets look like when we're sending them off, regardless of whether they're processed here or not? Are these birds staying in the Midwest or going farther?
Yeah, I think there's a little of both. I would say a lot of the birds processed at Barron are large toms, and they will use them for making deli meats and things like that. And so those would be spread nationwide. The more local producers, they would be local and sold here within the state for the most part.
We're talking with Ron Kane. He is an expert on poultry production and management at the UW Poultry Division of Extension. You can join in. We're talking about turkey farms and production around our state. Did you make the decision to switch to local turkey from more recognizable brands you can get at the grocery store? Why did you do that? Where do you buy your Thanksgiving bird? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Ron, a number of turkey farms have wanted to go antibiotic free, and consumers especially are very tuned in to whether antibiotics are used to raise the turkey. What do you see there?
Yeah, that's definitely been a trend. I think the poultry industry really has cut back a great deal on antibiotic use. Some of that has been by rule. As about 3 years ago, the federal rules were put in place so that now every antibiotic has to have a veterinarian prescription. So that has changed things. And they have to be for specifically treating a disease. So there's no growth promotion use. So yeah, there's a push. Certainly, I think it's been a bit of a challenge with turkeys that they do have some problems occasionally that they need antibiotics. But there's definitely been an increase in antibiotic-free production.
Ron, I want to look more broadly at the world market. I'm wondering, you know, we've seen nationally turkey prices, they're at the lowest level since 2010. Does the trade war at all or tariffs have any impact on the turkey industry?
I don't know that there's any direct effect there that I am aware of. I don't think we've been selling a lot of turkey to China. Certainly, we hadn't sold any chicken to China since the influenza outbreaks in 2015. That has recently, I guess, been changed, or at least China has said they will start accepting some chicken. So I don't think there's been a great deal of direct effect there.
What about the health of these farms financially? You know, we've seen farms filing for Chapter 12 bankruptcies. They've risen 13% year over year. If you look from July, are turkey farms staying solvent?
I guess I don't have direct connection to that, but I haven't heard of it being a great issue. I think they've been fairly steady with their production, and costs have been down a bit because feed costs are pretty inexpensive right now. So I don't think it's a huge issue for the turkey producers currently.
Do most turkey producers in our state also have other products that they raise, or are they exclusively raising turkeys?
Yeah, I would say most of them would have, other aspects to their farms. So, either crop farming or some other animal production.
Yeah. Is there any value-added things that you're seeing with turkeys at all?
Right. You know, I think certainly not really value-added, but some other areas where the antibiotic-free and things like that. Turkey industry has done quite a bit, of course, over the years of, you know, again, using the TOMS for further processed, so deli meats and sausages and things like that. So I think those have been probably the areas they've looked at.
Do you think the turkey industry in Wisconsin will grow? What is the outlook like for you?
I think there will be some slight growth in the short term. I know there's at least some hopes that the pork situation in the world may drive a bit more poultry production and consumption. So I think in the short term, that might have some effect. In the long term, I'm not sure we'll see a great deal of difference. Turkey consumption has been fairly flat for the last few decades. And so unless we find some other method, I don't know if I see a great deal of increase, but hopefully some.
Ron, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Ron Kane is in poultry production and management at the UW Poultry Division of Extension, and we've been talking about the state of the turkey industry here in Wisconsin. Coming up, we talk with Wisconsin Workforce Development Secretary Designee Caleb Rossman. What are the barriers to employment in our state that you see? How do you feel about the future of your job and your industry? Join in at 800-642-1234. It's Secretary Caleb Rossman in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And if you're just joining us, we're going inside Governor Evers' cabinet to look at efforts to attract workers to our state. We're asking about how to better support existing industries and where there is new job growth. You've aligned to the head of Wisconsin Workforce Development. What are your big concerns about our labor market? Where are the barriers to employment that you see? Business owners, are there challenges to find qualified workers? What would help? We're at 800-642-1234. Caleb Rossman is the Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Secretary Rossman, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate. It's great to be back.
Well, earlier this month, we saw the Senate deny former Secretary Designee Agriculture Department Brad Paff that confirmation. Is this a concern among your colleagues?
You know, we keep doing great work. We just had a meeting last week, and, you know, we love our collective team, and we're doing great things for the folks of Wisconsin. So, you know, we continue to work with the legislature, and we do great constituent work for their residents in their area. We're really focusing on the job in front of us, and I think Wisconsinites are seeing fantastic customer service, a reflection of the values that were put forward in the election last November. So we are just keeping our heads down and working hard. And, you know, I think the work product speaks for itself.
We've watched our unemployment rate tick up for 5 months in a row now after that record set 2.8% back in April. And according to preliminary data, Wisconsin manufacturers are employing thousands fewer people. Why is this? What's going on with our economy?
You know, to your first question, I think most folks would recognize we're just returning back to what is considered more of a normal unemployment rate. Anytime you get down to 2.8, there's really not many other places to go than up. So we're still at, you know, historic lows at 3.3%. And then to the manufacturing piece, you know, we've seen our manufacturers and our agricultural industries really challenged throughout the nation, but including in Wisconsin, due to some of these trade wars that have been going on. And so when a vast part of our economy in Wisconsin is affected by this, it's not surprising to see our top two industries really hurt. We're losing 2 dairy farms per day in Wisconsin. And if we've lost, you know, a couple thousand manufacturing jobs year over year, these trade wars are not helping our Wisconsin economy.
Yeah, you travel all over the state talking with businesses, talking with manufacturers. What are they telling you about these tariffs?
You know, they're telling us that it's interesting that, you know, I think U.S. steel manufacturers would probably appreciate, you know, having greater competition with, you know, China. But then a lot of our manufacturers need to buy steel. And so if that cost goes up in other places, it's a challenge for them. And so it's not been very beneficial to our manufacturers here in Wisconsin as far as the tariff war.
Do you think the number of factory jobs will continue to decline?
That's a great question. I don't have a crystal ball, but I think those jobs might change. You know, you talk to experts in the field, and either between trade wars or, you know, a lot of folks worry about automation. But I think there's opportunity with automation that those jobs may or may not go away, but they may change to require a higher level of skill and, in a lot of cases, hopefully, you know, a higher overall compensation package with the complexity of that work.
Yeah, skill set, super important. And Wisconsin is among the 5 most manufacturing-reliant states in the country, manufacturing very sensitive to foreign trade and to recession. What do you do to make sure that our manufacturing industry is stable and growing here in Wisconsin?
That's a great question. And when we put forward the governor's budget earlier this year, we put really heavy investments in what we call economic infrastructure, so things that really grease the skids for all economic participants, things like roads, things like schools, so we have an educated workforce, and then things that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think about. But when we talk about the labor shortage, when we ask folks what attracts people to a geographic area, it's those quality of life investments, like the quality of roads, like the quality of our schools. And in large parts of Wisconsin, a continued barrier for residents, for tourists, continues to be broadband. And so we're very excited to see, you know, $48, $49 million investment over the next 2 years in broadband infrastructure as well.
When will we start seeing that change in broadband? Because, you know, people hear it's coming, it's coming,
yeah,
it's coming. But that there's all that anticipation. When do we see it spread across, especially northern Wisconsin?
Yeah, so I'm not an expert in PSC grants, but I believe that process is underway where the Public Service Commission is taking applications for broadband grants, and I think it's $24 million a year over the next 2 years. And they generally, you know, ask for, I don't know what the ratio is, but an investment from the community or another private private partner. But my recollection is that the $48 million investment is more than has been invested total prior to this biennium. So we're really excited to see that.
Talking with Caleb Frostman, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development, what workforce issues figure prominently in your industry, in your business? What questions do you have about the work of the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development? What do you want the department to focus on? Are you struggling to find a job? What is that like? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So in the latest Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS report, Wisconsin tied for first in the Midwest in average weekly wage growth. What does this mean for our state's workforce?
It's a great sign, and I think it's interesting. I've traveled the state a lot over the last year, and we've been asking folks, you know, what is it that helps attract and retain people? And it's those quality of life issues. But even ahead of that, it's been pay and benefits. And so the folks that the private industry that are doing well in attracting folks and keeping them prioritize competitive pay and strong benefits. And so I think this is a bearing out of that strategy. And you know, a lot of emphasis gets placed on how do we get more folks in the workforce? And that's a really important question for us. We worry about that every night. How do we get more folks into the workforce? But we also, if we want to grow Wisconsin's economy, have to make sure that the people that are currently working see economic gains and economic potential for themselves. And so wage growth is a top priority for the Evers administration. For myself at DWD, we want to make sure we get more folks in the workforce, but we want to make sure that the people that are there have economic opportunity to advance. And a big part of that is wage growth.
There are also issues with the unemployment gap between Black and white workers. What is your department doing to change that?
Great question. The governor likes to talk a lot about connecting the dots, and so we've been really working closely with other agencies on different programs. So one of the things that we administer is the WIOA plan, which is the Workforce Innovation Opportunities Act. It's a federal program, but we're bringing in new agencies this year, so Department of Corrections, Department of Children and Families, Department of Health Services, to expand our efforts to make sure that, you know, the stakeholders in our workforce programming have a say. And I think that, you know, the fact that this administration acknowledges that there's a gap and wants to fix that gap by working with programs, all of our programs, with an eye toward equity. The governor talks about that at every cabinet meeting, that no matter what we're doing, we're constantly thinking about everything through an equity lens. I think we're really excited to revamp one of our programs internally is Fast Forward, to make sure we have a really strong, consistent, equitable evaluation process, and that our lens is Wisconsin-wide, but that we look at all of our stuff with a lens toward equity.
What happens in Fast Forward? What is that program like?
Yep. So it's a state-funded program. It's supposed to be employer-led training, and a lot of times there's a consortia, whether that's a workforce board or a tech college, or sometimes a couple employers get together to deliver training that in a, you know, the best case scenario is it's transferable training. It provides a stackable credential, and it fills a workforce training need that's currently not out there. And so we just had an audit from the Legislative Audit Bureau, which was extremely helpful. A lot of us were familiar with Fast Forward for some time and knew there's room for improvement. So we actually asked the LAB to expand the scope of the audit to help make this program even better going forward. So we're excited to make investments in Wisconsin's workforce to get more folks in there and also help workers achieve better economic outcomes.
Well, let's take a moment here and talk about Foxconn. There was this report last week from Foxconn claiming that 26 newly recruited plants plant managers from the U.S. have been at Foxconn Technology Group in Taiwan undergoing training, thousands of hours of training. What is the role of Wisconsin workforce development in Foxconn, you know, taking shape in our state? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we've been ready to help Foxconn as they need things with either our Job Center of Wisconsin, which is a pretty comprehensive job listing website to help folks find Foxconn, but then also work with them to help find the right personnel. And to this point, they've been doing most of their work independently. We've got a pretty strong infrastructure built out, ready to help Foxconn, but they've really been moving on their own for the most part, which is fine. A lot of employers do that, but we are at the ready to help them with their workforce needs as they need us.
So really not much interaction at all with workforce development as of yet?
As far as the recruiting, not so much, but we work very closely with them on like our workers' compensation division with their construction project that's wrapped up. It was a very successful, safe project, and so we oversee a lot of big projects like that, so we're happy that that was completed safely.
The Wisconsin Counties Association has a new report saying that our state's population will begin to decline by 2026. Several things sticking out in this report: decreasing teen pregnancy, delaying having kids, and an inability to keep our young people in the state. So what are you doing to attract and retain those young people?
Great question. And so I think it's looking at the latter two, we've been asking ourselves a lot of hard questions. And that, not necessarily there's anyone to blame, but, why are some of the reasons that folks are waiting to have kids? Why are some of the reasons that people are choosing not to have families? And you look at things like mounting student debt. You look at wages stagnating in relation to cost of living, even though we had a good year over year this year. And so we have prioritized those quality of life, economic infrastructure investments, because when we've asked employers and have asked employees, what is it that attracts you? It's those things I talked about. And so other states are competing for the same talent. And so we, of course, try to showcase what we do well. But to the extent we have control over our investments, we want to make it those things that really attract families to live in Wisconsin.
We're talking with Workforce Development Secretary-designee Caleb Frostman about a range of issues he faces in the areas of wage and job creation. What questions do you have about the growth and stability of the industry you work in? What concerns you about the future of the gig economy in our state? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back with Secretary Caleb Frostman right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is expected to create more than 210,000 jobs between 2016 and 2026, and there will be more than 3.5 million job openings due to people leaving an occupation or exiting the workforce altogether. Those numbers from the state's Office of Economic Advisors. So business owners, is it difficult to find employees with the right skill set? What would help you staff up? What role should state government have in developing a workforce for your industry? And what policies would you like to see pursued in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Workforce Development Secretary-designee Caleb Frostman stays with us. Secretary, Governor Evers has proposed raising minimum wage in the state from just over $7 an hour to $15 an hour. Do you think this will help sustain the state's workforce?
Well, it's interesting. You look out there and the minimum wage has not been raised in over 10 years in Wisconsin, which is it's the whole philosophy behind it is you have to keep up with the cost of living. And it's pretty hard to argue that the cost of living has not risen markedly over the last 10 years. So that proposal, which was really modest and incremental, it was like $1 a year in year one and then 75 cents a year in two, three, and four. But eventually getting to a wage that allows people who are putting in 40 hours a week to be self-sufficient, that's the whole idea behind a minimum wage. And so we, again, to earlier point, earlier conversation about the importance of wages that, someone that puts in 40 hours a week, if they can't support themselves with a roof over their head and food on their table, we're not doing something right. And so that's where that proposal comes from. And we're, I think, excited to hopefully revisit that going forward, because $7.25 an hour in 2019 is not a living wage for anyone in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and there's a push, too, to get state employees to that $15 an hour mark.
Yep. I think the most recent proposal has been to do that. And I think you want to lead by example. And we talk about the state being a model employer for a lot of things. Internally, you know, we oversee workforce development efforts for folks with disabilities. And so we would like to be a choice employer for folks with disabilities. But the same piece on what we think is a value statement for the value of work, we want to do that as a state employer as well.
So earlier this year, you and Senator Lena Taylor met with Wisconsin Pipe Trades to look at lead safety issues. Your department is also focused on clean water as a workforce issue. What have you seen there with Wisconsin Pipe Trades and the status of lead in our pipes?
Well, it's interesting. I think we're going to get there a little bit later on the apprenticeship piece, but that was such a great way for us to connect the dots in terms of our programming, a learn and earn model to help folks learn a trade and earn a living wage at the same time, and have it line up with an initiative like, working with lead pipes in Milwaukee and elsewhere. So I think, again, going back to that quality of life, whether you're in an urban or a rural area, something we end up talking about, it's not necessarily a traditional workforce issue, but when it comes to attracting and retaining people, water quality is a big deal for a lot of folks in Wisconsin. Whether you're in Milwaukee, Green Bay, or you're in Muscadet or Sturgeon Bay or wherever you are, that's a big issue for a lot of folks. So we're excited to put our programming to use to help folks get clean water.
Yeah, I mean, Governor Evers declared this year the year of water, 2019, the year of water. Have we seen strides, from those cabinet meetings and then getting those ideas out into different areas of the state? What have you seen?
You know, it's interesting. As the Workforce Development Secretary, we've talked about the importance of that issue for attracting folks. But within the cabinet, not surprisingly, it's been, DATCAP and DNR have worked closely together on coming up with improvements and enhancements and new trajectories for water quality in Wisconsin. But on our end, it's more been the attractiveness piece to new residents and retaining people with good water here.
Because of lead safety issues, the need for more skilled trade laborers has significantly increased. Do we have enough people for the 170,000 lead service lines that need to be replaced?
Interesting. It's going back to the apprenticeship piece, that's one of the best ways we found to address quantity to get folks into the workforce. But it's also one of the best ways that we found to help encourage quality jobs. That is, folks learn that skill and become a journeyman, whether it's a plumber or a pipe fitter or a welder, they can earn a living wage while learning that skill. And so I think what we've tried to do is market the viability of careers in the trades. That, obviously there's a lot of opportunity with the four-year degree, but there's also a lot of opportunity through either a tech college system or through an apprenticeship. And one of the things I'm most excited about in this job is I get to sit on the tech college system board of directors. In my very first meeting, they had an outcomes report, and they showed the starting salary across all registered apprenticeships, and it was north of $75,000 a year. And so that's, of course, an average, but when we talk about quantity of jobs and talk about quality, if you've earned a living wage in a lot of cases through your training process, and then when you finish, that's your starting salary. That's a pretty decent wage to pay your bills, invest in your future, and invest in your community.
I'm wondering, though, do we still have perception issues with factory jobs, that they are dingy, they're hard on our bodies? What do you see there?
That's a great question, a great observation. And I think there's momentum going the other direction. I think that today's manufacturers are doing a great job of marketing the viability of careers in whether it's manufacturing or the skilled trades. And we're trying to help with that process, that the days of dark, dirty, dingy are gone. And, it's not only is it clean and well-lit, but it's also, a lot of times intellectually challenging. And there's a diverse array of opportunities in the skilled trades and in manufacturing. You can work in accounting, HR, finance. You can work with your hands. You can do all sorts of things. And so I've been really, really encouraged traveling the state, seeing the advocacy work for kind of equal career consideration. We don't necessarily pick favorites, but we want to make sure that folks are considering everything that's out there. And the manufacturers and the skilled tradespersons are doing a fantastic job of marketing their careers, career paths.
What kind of apprenticeships do you think are really leading the pack, that you're trying to get a lot in there and get a lot of skilled people out?
Again, we try to make sure that we are creating equal career consideration, but generally in that top half of that average, you see things like operating engineers this last year. If I recall, I think that that starting salary for an operating engineer finishing their registered apprenticeship was north of $100,000. And so assuming you've got the skill set to start that either immediately after high school or shortly thereafter, that's a really nice wage to be making in your mid-20s. And then, you know, kind of when we look through this lens of how do we help build wealth and drive our economy in Wisconsin, we think about traditional wealth building tactics like saving the liquidity for a down payment on your first house, paying off student debt. And so as we look to prioritize programming, those are the considerations we think about when trying to help Wisconsin families move forward.
Oh, you see a ripple effect then when they have that strong wage early on.
Absolutely. I mean, definitely in things like retirement saving, but also, you know, again, getting back to asking those hard questions of why aren't folks having families? Why aren't we seeing the same type of economic expansion through these really low unemployment periods? A lot of it comes back to wages. And so when folks can invest in a home, when they can invest adequately in a 401k and get the value of compound interest over time, that's where we're really looking with our program to make sure that folks have that ability.
We're talking with Caleb Frostman, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. You can join in. What questions do you have for Secretary Frostman? Do you work in construction, manufacturing, or in another trade? Did you go through an apprenticeship program? How did you break into your industry? You can join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary Frostman, as we do see, though, younger generations moving to some of the big cities like Chicago and elsewhere, Los Angeles, New York, or trying to break into their careers elsewhere, how do you attract young talent back to their roots in Wisconsin?
Really good question. I think we've got some great momentum. I think some of the larger urban centers, you see something like in Eau Claire is doing very, very well. I think Milwaukee's on the upswing. And then our rural areas are really attractive from a recreational standpoint, from a quality of life standpoint. And I think making those investments in economic infrastructure like schools, like roads, like broadband, things that folks don't necessarily see as flashy, but are absolutely indicative of quality of life. We think that's really attractive. And Wisconsin, there are always going to be big flashy cities, and some of our young people will always go try something different. We hope to keep more, but we also hope to attract more back. And so it's going to be a dynamic process, but we think making continued investments in our state from a quality of life perspective and things like broadband is going to be a huge win for Wisconsin.
Like, you can go out and do your thing for a while, but that you'll find your way back.
Yeah, and that's what I did, my personal story. I moved to the Twin Cities for 9 years after college, and it was a wonderful experience. It was really eye-opening for me, but I was so grateful to come back to, a relatively small town in Wisconsin in Sturgeon Bay and found the quality of life just outstanding, and I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, so it's great.
How is Sturgeon Bay and smaller communities, how are they doing? I mean, we know broadband is getting out there and getting established, but how else do you see those downtowns doing?
It varies town by town. A lot of small towns in Wisconsin have a lot of pride, and they invest a ton of time and money and energy into their urban core, even if the urban core is a city of 1,500 people. I think even things like facade improvement just kind of help create traffic for those areas. So I think I've been really excited to see kind of a renaissance in a lot of small towns in Wisconsin. Some are still, on the upswing, but, I'm obviously a little bit biased, but, Sturgeon Bay has a fantastic downtown, and I really love going back and seeing the vibrancy of a thriving, walkable downtown.
Some of these communities, too, are built around, a couple few manufacturers who have had a long tradition in a particular community. Are you seeing more diversification out there?
We are, and I think that's another really important point for broadband as you look at, how do you attract telecommuters, how do you attract small business? That's really, the way we look at it is an equality of opportunity issue for small businesses, for students. If you want to diversify your economy, that is such an important pillar of strong commerce is having that connectivity. And so we are seeing areas diversify, but the areas that are struggling to do so, a big reason for that is a lack of investment in broadband up to this point.
Your department oversees Project Search. What does this initiative offer Wisconsin's workforce?
This is an awesome initiative. This is I've had many highlights throughout the first year in the job, but Project Search graduations and visits are probably my favorite. It's an unpaid internship for 18 to 21 year olds with developmental disabilities. And it started in Cincinnati Children's Hospital, but it lends itself well to healthcare, but it can be done in other industries as well. But these students go through rotations within this company, whichever it might be, and they learn three or four different jobs. And at the very end, they've got a resume, they've got skills that they can market themselves on, and a huge majority of them graduate the program, and a majority of them find work, sometimes self-sustaining full-time work after the program. And it's interesting that the biggest payback for a lot of these students, according to their instructors and their families, is just the change in confidence. They really have a newfound sense of purpose and a newfound sense of identity. And so we've got 27 sites in Wisconsin. 11 years ago, we only had one. So we're hoping to build out a few more over the next few years. And it's just a really impactful program.
We're talking with Wisconsin's Secretary-Designee of Workforce Development. Caleb Frostman is our guide. What questions do you have for the state's head of workforce development? Do you work in manufacturing or in another area? How did you break into your industry? Did you participate in an apprenticeship program? What does that mean for your career path? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. It's Secretary Caleb Frostman, and we'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the job situation in Wisconsin and the biggest issues facing business and industry. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Wisconsin's unemployment rate ticked up to 3.3% in October. That's the fifth straight month it's increased. We set a record low of 2.8% unemployment rate back in April. And economists, they see year-over-year job declines affecting both durable and non-durable goods, which leads us to wonder, are tariffs or the rising cost of raw materials an issue in your business? What is that doing to your bottom line and your hiring situation? How could the state workforce development group help? Should a drug test be required to get unemployment benefits? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. And Wisconsin Workforce Development Secretary-Designee Caleb Frostman stays with us. We had Liz, who couldn't stay with us from Dodgeville, but she would like to know, what is the state doing to attract solar panel manufacturers and the solar industry?
Yeah, good question. So this administration obviously has a really strong eye towards sustainability and green development and green jobs. And so the department, works really closely with the lieutenant governor. It's got a really strong eye towards sustainability as well. And then the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation has, more incentives to attract any type of, manufacturer or employer than we have, other than, training infrastructure and investments in our workforce. So we do look at connecting the dots among agencies, among elected officials to make that happen. But our department doesn't have any specific attraction methods for any industry, just per se.
The Trump administration approved a new regulation allowing states to include drug testing as a condition for anyone receiving unemployment benefits. Is this likely to go in effect in Wisconsin anytime soon?
We are currently reviewing the scope statement. Our legal team is looking at that. And interesting, anything that affects unemployment insurance in Wisconsin, when there are rules being made, generally goes to what's called our Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council, which is a balanced body of five members from labor and five members from management. And they get in a room and hash out negotiations and come out with what makes sense. But when that happens, we will implement the law and move forward.
If the state does move forward with this, how does this work? How does this come together? What happens if someone fails a drug test, and how do you put this plan in place?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I find there's not a whole lot of common knowledge around unemployment insurance and how that works. And so, in Wisconsin, to be eligible for unemployment insurance, you have to have lost a job through no fault of your own, and then there are job search requirements and and if you turn down suitable work, then you lose your benefits. But it's an insurance program. Employers pay into it at the state level and the federal level. And my understanding of this proposed program is that there would be drug testing required for those people on unemployment who lost their job through no fault of their own, but whose only suitable work is in an industry that requires regular drug testing. So think about perhaps truck drivers or police officers. And so the scope of that is yet to be determined, but that is my interpretation of where that's going. Our legal team continues to look at it, but that's kind of how that would work.
Talking with Caleb Frostman, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Secretary, we spoke with Secretary of Revenue Peter Barca last month about the joint task force to address worker misclassification and payroll tax fraud after dozens of companies were suspected of fraudulent practices. What new insight has the department gained from the task force?
It's been a really interesting couple of meetings, and we have a strong investigatory team at DWD that looks at these types of fraud, including at the claimant level, but also at the employer level. And I think some of the most interesting takeaways we've had thus far have been, to some extent, the prevalence, but then also who's asking for this task force and who's asking for change. In so many cases, it's employers, it's law-abiding companies that play by the rules and then are at a competitive disadvantage when their competitors do not follow the rules, when they don't properly classify their employees and thereby evade paying unemployment insurance. They don't pay the proper worker compensation premiums. And then those workers don't get those protections. And they also don't get the protections of if they're discriminated against in the workplace. A lot of times it's not always this way, but there are times that it's tied to wage theft or, you know, to some extent, human trafficking for labor. And so it's been a really enlightening couple of meetings. We have a few more to go before we start putting forward recommendations, but it's been a really interesting couple of meetings for misclassification.
What type of reforms do you envision? What would be feasible for Wisconsin?
Another good question. I think an equal emphasis, maybe not equal, but a joint emphasis on enforcement and education. We see different industries that are suspected of having high percentage of misclassification, one of which was nail salons. And there was, when we investigated, rampant misclassification, but through a combination of enforcement and a lot of education, that was cut drastically. And so I think this task force will put forward recommendations. There's a chance that some laws could be, or bills could be drafted for the legislature. There could be some different penalties that might be enforceable, but and perhaps some data sharing. That's another issue that when one of these companies gets busted, they just fold as ABC company and come back again as XYZ. And so if there's ways that our systems can talk to each other while maintaining confidentiality, that might be a great way to prevent some of this going forward.
Oh, you mean like they fold and then reemerge as a different entity doing the same thing over again?
Yes, and sometimes within Wisconsin, sometimes in a different state. And so there are different industries that have this at a higher prevalence, but one that comes up all the time is, for whatever reason, drywallers. You hear about drywallers doing this, but it'll be Mark Jones Construction, and then the next time it's, ABC Drywall, and then they'll just change entity names to avoid enforcement.
Let's look for a moment here at the gig economy. The task force has also discussed the future of companies like Uber, like Lyft in the state. How will workforce development go about supporting workers in the gig economy and making sure this is a fair economy?
We are really interested in how the gig economy is going to affect Wisconsin working families, and understand that, as technology advances, that things are going to look different, and that's there's not much we can do about that. In a lot of ways, progress is a good thing, but we continue to focus on advocating for working folks in Wisconsin, and so we want to make sure that no one's being exploited, no one's being taken advantage of, that folks are getting the protections that they deserve, especially if they fall in the category of employee, and we've got a couple different tests to determine whether someone's an independent contractor or an employee. But if they fall in that category of being an employee, Wisconsin's been a leader in workforce for a long time, including to being the first state for both unemployment insurance and workers' comp. And so we've got a really strong priority to make sure that people that work hard in Wisconsin get a fair day's pay, and that includes protections like unemployment insurance, workers' comp, and fair pay.
When you talk about education, is it because that our laws can be a little bit complex and that a company may not even realize that they're breaking the law?
Definitely. I think a lot of times Yeah, laws can be complex or just not well communicated. At DWD, we do a fair number of labor law clinics, whether that's for discrimination, workers' comp, unemployment insurance. And I do think that will be, at least to this point, it seems like that'll be a takeaway for this task force, that greater education can be a tool in our tool belt to make folks aware of what's legal and what's not.
Oh, so here we are close to the end of the year, and I'm curious, as you look forward to 2020, are there particular goals or resolutions, if you will, that you have for workforce development?
Great question. I think first and foremost, we want to maintain a really robust economy and build out our training infrastructure to its top potential. You know, we really are strong believers in programs like apprenticeship. We saw a 20% year-over-year gain in youth apprenticeship, which is fantastic. We'd love to, you know, repeat that. And then I do think we are really excited to put into practice these recommendations coming forward for Fast Forward. We don't have that many state-funded programs that allow us to, you know, invest in training infrastructure like Fast Forward does. And so I think making that program the best it can be for getting folks into the workforce and helping people already working see economic gains is something we're really excited about.
Well, Secretary Frostman, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Kate. I really appreciate it.
Caleb Frostman is the Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.